Good evening and welcome to another episode of Nigeria Politics Weekly. As usual, my name is Michael and co-hosting with me is Phoenix. We have two guests, we have one guest today. Our guest is Salihu Dasuki Nakande. He's a university lecturer and member of the APC, the All Progressives Congress. Now, the three topics we'll be discussing are firstly, the presidential declaration by Vice President Oshibanjo. Secondly, we'll be discussing the decision by President Buhari to grant pardons to former governors Dariye and Jolly Niamey, who were convicted of corruption. And thirdly, we'll be discussing the decision by the National Assembly to approve 4 trillion naira, which is about $8 billion, I think, to fund fuel subsidies. So to our first question, Phoenix, Vice President Oshibanjo has entered the race. Some people have already described him as Judas. Do you think his declaration, Phoenix, was an act of Judas, Phoenix?
Hi, Michael, and hi, Sally. Thanks for joining us, and hello, listeners. I think that description is just nonsense, in my view. I mean, anyone who thinks that a healthy and capable vice president should not aspire to be president, especially having served 2 terms with a president, must be out of their mind. I mean, you're asking someone not to show ambition. It makes zero sense to me. So calling him a Judas, which refers to his relationship with Tinubu. For those who may not know, he came to political prominence working with Tinubu first as, the Attorney General in Lagos State for Tinubu's 8-year term. And they've been very close. We know he's also been Tinubu's lawyer and things like that. And the story goes, and maybe Sally, you can, as member of the APC, validate that. The story goes that when Tinubu could not be on the Buhari ticket, that he was the one who pushed Oshibanjo forward. So that's where this idea of Judas is coming from. But as far as I'm concerned, it makes no sense. The moment that he got onto that ticket and they won the first term, they came back and were reelected, people should have known that, I mean, it would be ridiculous to ask him not to show ambition. I would have held it against him if he didn't show the ambition to become president. He has every right to aspire to the office. In my view, if I look at the APC field, I would call him the pick of the pack in the APC. So I don't ascribe to that Judas appellation at all. It makes no sense to me.
Thank you, Phoenix. To Salihu, I've been looking at the text of Vice President Oshibanjo's speech. And one of the things he said, he opened with this line. He said, "I have served as vice president under a true Nigerian patriot, a servant of the nation in war and peace, and a man of integrity." Now, Salihu, would you agree? Do you agree that President Buhari is a patriot and a man of integrity?
Michael, thank you for inviting me to speak, and hello to the listeners. Is President Buhari a patriot? Absolutely, he's a patriot. He's a patriot, Michael. This is a man that has served as a president of Nigeria in the past. This is a man that has served the Nigerian army and has sworn to protect the lives of Nigeria. This is a man that has participated to defend the sovereignty of Nigeria during the Civil War. So absolutely, he's a patriot. In terms of integrity, it's obvious. You can't just keep shouting that Buhari is a man of integrity. People have been shouting that for long, since 2003, because of his lifestyle. People that experienced his government in the past saw the kind of lifestyle it was that time, zero corruption. So he is a man of integrity. As an individual, is he a man of integrity? Yes, absolutely. You can't take that away from him, that he's a patriot and he's a man of integrity.
Oh, thank you, Salim, for setting that stall. So if in your view he's a man of integrity, then he promised a lot of things when he came into power. For example, he said he would publicly declare his assets, but nobody has seen his assets declaration form. He said he was going to sell the presidential jets when he came into office, but they're still there. So how do you reconcile those promises with someone who you claim has integrity, Salim?
So Michael, having an integrity is an individual characteristic, isn't it? It is. Is he corrupt? No. Now let's go back to the whole his declaration of his assets. He said he will declare those assets, and he did. But now every Nigerian is saying they won't see it on the public space. Why should they see it on the public space? He should have his own set of privacy. He has declared it. His constitutional right also to declare it, and he did. But everyone wants to see it out on the media, on social media, on and then what? If you want to see his declaration form, you go and request it out there in the agency where it is. But for him to just because he's like telling me that I was born on this particular date and I've told you and I've written it in the form, but you're still asking me that I should share my data page for you to the media or I should share that form to you. No. I think they should respect his privacy. He has declared it. If he hasn't declared it, he won't be sitting down there. And they said it, so there's nothing to lie about. With regards to selling this jets and whatever, I think the whole situation, the whole Nigerian situation is a very, very complex situation. Maybe we're in a military dispensation where it's a one-man show, then I believe there are a lot of stuff that he can be able to do. But even though he's the sitting president, doesn't just make him automatically what take decisions and make laws just like that. So in general, I just feel that there are stuff that he wants to do, but unfortunately, the realities are not what will support him in doing those stuff within the time period that he has been in this government.
Thank you, Salim. Let me bring in Phoenix at this point. So, Phoenix, firstly, can you address Salim's first previous point that he says Buhari is a man of integrity and Buhari has declared his assets, and if you want to see them, then you should go and look for them and not disturb the man Buhari. And then secondly, I want us to go into the substance of Oshibanjo's speech, because I've sort of read through it and I've not seen him identify any achievements since he's been in office for the past 7 years. Or is it me misreading it? So I could address these two issues, Phoenix.
I think the first issue, I was quite surprised that Salim would say that that he declared his assets and that should be that. But that wasn't the promise that he made. He did not have to make it a campaign issue because he is legally required, constitutionally required to declare his assets. So he didn't need to speak about it. The reason why he spoke about it was to further the image of him being someone of integrity, which was the issue that people had at that time. And what he said, the expectation was that he was going to declare publicly. Nobody would have asked him any question if he didn't talk about it, because he legally has to declare his assets. So he cannot be president without declaring. So that was always going to happen. What he was saying was that I would declare publicly. And because we had precedent, everyone expected that if we had precedent, and I'm talking about Umar Musa Yar'Adua, who did this and did this to such a level of detail that it's still the standard by which we hold presidents in Nigeria. And if we had that precedent from Umar Musa Yar'Adua, may God rest his soul, one expected that Buhari, who was seen as being of a higher caliber of integrity, would go even further. But he didn't do that. He did try to fulfill that promise of declaring publicly. But what he did was nowhere near the level of detail that people expected. It was vague, it was opaque, but he did try to put it out there. So to say that he fulfilled the requirement or he fulfilled his role, that's not true. And that was the first sneak signal that he wasn't what people expected him to be. That did not portray someone of integrity. Till tomorrow, people still don't understand why it was hard for him to declare his assets publicly the way he had promised to do so. So that's on the one hand. I think other incidents have come up to show that this integrity conversation or this toga that he wore was something that was a facade. And we're not going to go into all of that now because, I mean, we'd like to swing into the focus on Oshimbajo's speech. And I think, Michael, in the same way you are stumped looking for achievements, it was the same way I went through that whole 6-minute declaration speech. And no, there's no single achievement that he called out. He mentioned, yes, that he had served, he had built up experiences, he harped on loyalty, he harped on, serving with the president, I mean, talking of the president and then talking about challenges they met and blah, 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 blah. But you see, it's difficult to call out any achievements where there are none. It is without doubt that this administration has been an unmitigated failure in every sphere you look at. If you look at where we were in 2014, the problems that we had, and there were problems, and left to me, yes, indeed, we needed something different. And so if you are coming in to give us something different, you're now 7 going on 8 years in. The question is, that is enough time for you to have made a significant shift in the state of the nation. But we are worse than where we were in 2014. We have today inflation firmly entrenched in the high double digits. We have unemployment touching almost at 40%. I'm sure by the time they give us the next figures, it will be 40% or beyond. We have power, which was on the pace to being fixed, albeit there were issues with it. But if they had taken off from there and focused on that, just give us that one thing, we should be further along. We're worse off than where we were. So there are no achievements to call out. What would you say? The man talked about him being to every local government, him being to every market. Yes, we remember that he has been to markets. What did he go and do in the markets? He was sharing money. He was giving cash handouts to people, which shows that they could not create wealth. They could not create opportunities for people. We could not enable an economy to continue to grow, to enable people find means to take care of themselves. And so instead, what they did was to, especially around election time, to go out and start giving cash handouts. So I've been interested in seeing the Oshimbajo candidacy. Like I said, I think he's the pick of the bunch from the APC. Of course, I've said several times on the show that he would never have my support, not only because he's in the APC, nobody in the APC will have my support, but I also believe very firmly that the next president of Nigeria should come from the Southeast. So clearly he doesn't come from there, so he won't have my support from that regard. But that he was the number two man in this government is the cross that he's going to have to bear. He cannot extricate himself from the failure that this administration has been, regardless of whatever his supporters will want to tell you. He's a key part of this government. They have not delivered anything to the Nigerian people. They've taken us back several steps. And therefore, you could see it in his declaration that he could not point to anything to celebrate, to call out. I mean, when a vice president declares to replace his principal, after the principal has done 2 terms and can't run anymore, what you are expecting is you campaign on the basis of continuity, unless there was clear rift or division between them. You campaign on the basis of continuity to say, this guy has done X and Y great things. I will carry it on by taking it to the next level. You didn't hear any of that. So for me, it's a clear sign that that Nigerians should take heed of.
Thank you, Felix. Let me go to Salihu. Salihu, I have two questions for you. The first question is, as you've heard Phoenix say, he says he doesn't believe Osibanjo and Buhari have achieved anything worthy of mention. So first of all, to Salihu, what are the achievements of the Vice President Osibanjo that he can sell to the Nigerian people? And the second question is, what do you think are his prospects of success at the upcoming APC presidential primaries?
Thank you, Michael, for this. I need to respond to Phoenix. I think with the analysis Phoenix has been making, he has been very, very, very unfair to the APC. He has been very, very unfair to the APC. Phoenix has made it clear in a way as if the APC has achieved nothing since they got into power. But I think I need to respond to it by answering your question, Michael. Yes, obviously, this is a new government that came in 2015. And it came with some enormous challenges. And obviously, before you address a lot of challenges, you need to find out what are the root causes of these challenges. It hasn't been the best of the best with a lot of global economic impact on that country. And then, for example, Phoenix was talking about inflation, that inflation is at the highest level. Well, globally, inflation is at the highest level globally. Everywhere can feel the economic impact. And then you can look at the impact that it's going to cause globally abroad and then the impact that it's going to cause in a country like Nigeria. Phoenix also talked about handouts that were given during the electioneering period. Well, I'm not sure the background of Phoenix, but sometimes Phoenix needs to understand that there are empowerment programs that are usually directed to the unbanked people. And usually these unbanked people are people that might not necessarily have access to the bank. And the only way you can give them this support and empowerment program is via cash. And these programs have shown to have what economic impact in the lives of these people. And then also, why again did Phoenix go on to say he has just been unfair on this government? But again, looking at it again, what are the achievement this government has made? You know, you need to understand also that in the previous administration, the legislation made it very, very difficult for the government. That was when Bukola Saraki was a speaker. They made it so difficult for the government. A lot of projects were out there, hanging in there without the approval of the legislation, making it so difficult for the government to execute a lot of this project. And we hold the APC at a fault at that particular time for not trying to deal with that internal politics issue between what the legislation and the executive at that time. And now let's come back to the second dispensation with the whole idea of pandemic. The pandemic affected every single aspect of life in this whole world. So you can imagine the impact you'd have in the global south, in a least developing country like Nigeria. But you can't take it out again in terms of what infrastructure. Nigeria has achieved a lot in terms of infrastructure. Insecurity is on the rise. But one of the key issues that my President Muhammadu Buhari came to power was to do with insecurity. And we cannot argue or we cannot disagree to say that they haven't dealt with the insecurity problems in the Northeast. But unfortunately, while we're having insecurity problems in the Northeast, then banditry keeps on coming out. Insecurity issues are coming out from the Southeast as well. And then the people have come out to say, what's the issue? Can the president deal with this? The president has said, fine, we can deal with this issue, but let everyone go back to their traditional rulers. Let them go back to communities. Let them find community-based solutions. Sometimes you don't just bring these issues from there. And then you can't just keep putting the blame on this government. What about the local government chairman? What about the councillors? What about the governors in itself? But everyone keeps putting the blame on Osibanjo. They keep putting the blame on Buhari. And then they forget that there are other representatives that are out there that they've selected. So again, this is just my whole take about it. Things have deteriorated. I don't want to start putting it and saying, oh, external factors that are making life ungovernable for Buhari, I will take responsibility as a party that yes, obviously there are some areas that have not been achieved, but I believe we can do better. I think we've done much better than the previous government. We've done much better than PDP. If the APC were in government in 1999, I'm sure would have been in the levels of countries like South Africa by now. And obviously, again, we just came in 2015, so it's all learning and learning. And I'm sure there's a lot that have been learned. And I'm sure if APC continues in power in 2023, hopefully a lot of learning would have been done and a lot of improvement would have been made. And with regards to now the Osibanjo presidency, you know, he has every right to contest. And I have my own candidate I'm supporting in APC for the 2023, but can Osibanjo deliver? Can he ride on this present government? Yes, obviously he can ride on the present government. There are areas that obviously the government has succeeded. There are areas that the government has succeeded, and I'm sure he's gonna bank on that areas to sell himself. But again, Phoenix has said that he's not in support of the presidency going to Southwest and it should go to the Southeast. But I guess that's another discussion for another day, because I would have wanted to respond to him as well with regards to that agenda. Thank you.
Thank you, Salihu. It's obvious that yourself and Phoenix have different perspectives on both the performance of this government and
We absolutely do, Michael, because I don't expect Salihu to say anything different, so I'll cut him some slack on that. But just something I wanted to point out, because when he talks about the problems that the government inherited, and I always tell people, because even from back in 2016, I had already been drawing parallels between Egypt and Nigeria, and I always tell people to go back and take a look. Within the same period that Buhari came into power, Egypt, which was in a much dire situation, just on power alone, on electricity, they jumped 68 positions. I mean, in terms of being ranked 145th in the world, from a power generation perspective, they jumped to 77. And that was because they had a focused government that delivered on something that was that vital. So, yeah, I mean, just compare the indices between Egypt and Nigeria and then tell me that some global economic issue. I mean, we had a global financial crisis in 2008 to 2009. Umar Yar'Adua did not buckle under the pressure of that global financial crisis. We continued to grow. So to use external, which had limited impact on Nigeria in any case, as justification doesn't hold water with me. I'm sorry, Nigeria. I mean, where we were even before the pandemic, we were in a bad situation. The 33% unemployment was already in place before the pandemic. So anyways, let's carry on. And I want to mention that I think Osei has now been able to join us.
Oh, yes. Thank you. I can see that Osei Aneni is here. For those who don't know, Osei is a member of the People's Democratic Party and a hotelier. Also, sorry you missed the first question. There was an interesting debate because Salihu Dasuki Nakande, who's here, is a member of the APC and a staunch defender of the Buhari administration. But on to our second topic, which is the presidential pardons granted to Governors Dariye and Jolly Iniame. First of all, they're both PDP governors who were convicted of corruption. Governor Dariye was a former governor of Plateau State, and Jolly Iniame was a former governor of Taraba State. So let me ask Osei the first question. Osei, these were governors under your party who were jailed for corruption, and they've now been pardoned. Can you talk us through the reasoning of the president for pardoning them, and do you think that was the right decision, Osei?
Yeah, hi, guys. First of all, apologies for joining late. I'm on the campaign trail. And you get stuck on the road or in meetings, and unfortunately, one meeting just overran. So I'm glad to be here. I was actually looking forward to the first topic as well. I'm gutted I missed it. So I'll force maybe a little bit more energy into answering the second one. I think part of the problem that we have with the APC government is one of almost genetic hypocrisy. Now, you know, in and of itself, things like the fuel subsidy aren't a problem. Presidential pardons are not a Nigerian tool. All nations, in some way, shape, or form, have invoked presidential pardons. In democracies, you usually find them being applied in the dying days of, you know, the second term president. Clinton was famous for, you know, really, really going to town with them. I think, but the problem really isn't, so the problem isn't the concept of presidential pardons. They exist for a reason. The problem we sort of are facing now is how critical, you know, this government was of President Goodluck Jonathan when he did some pardons. I think maybe the most, the one that got the APC opposition at the time up in arms the most was it Alamesia's? And I could go on, I don't know if we have the time, I could tell you what they said then about pardoning a convicted looter, and the justifications they are giving for, you know, their president now pardoning convicted criminals. For me, really is the hypocrisy. I want to plead that I hear Dalisu's defense so that I can orchestrate a more robust response to his justification of this, of the hypocrisy of the Buhari government.
Thank you, Osei. Let me come to Salihu before I go to Phoenix. So, Salihu, your president, the man you claim has integrity and is a patriot, has pardoned two convicted criminals, governors who breached the public's trust by looting the treasury. So how do you respond to that? How does your party defend such conduct, Salihu?
Mr. Michael, I think pardoning this ex-convict has nothing to do with his integrity. Yeah, I think we should stop attacking Buhari's integrity because of it, he's a man of integrity. Does that mean he shouldn't have a forgiving heart? No, that's even outside this whole pardoning stuff. So I think we should stop. Even if I'm a man of integrity, I've never stolen money. If I see a thief in the street and has decided to repent, I can forgive him. So let's just move away from this whole side of the whole pardon stuff and linking it directly to the integrity of President Muhammadu Buhari. He's a human being and he has the right to forgive. Now let's go back to this bigger picture of the whole presidential pardon. You see, this whole presidential pardon of a team, it never, even if you're now linking it to President Muhammadu Buhari, he never told us in any of his campaign that he would never forgive anybody. But now again, there is a committee. This is not a one-man show. He did not just come to pardon them. This there is a committee, and this committee come up with their report, and then they come up with their recommendation. And based on these recommendations, then the president acts on it. I haven't read what is in the document, but obviously we have key people in that committee, like President Gowon, them, or Obasanjo, and the rest, key stakeholders in this government. There might have been a concrete reason why they have justified that this ex-convict should be what pardoned. Yeah, but I don't think they should put the sole responsibility on Buhari and then linking it to his integrity. Let's look at it from the other side of the what presidential committee on this pardon. What is the recommendation? What could have been the justification? So I'm sure they would have had a very, very strong justification to allow President Muhammadu Buhari act on it and grant this presidential pardon. So that's just my whole discussion about it. I mean, Osei was talking about the hypocrisy when the PDP did it during Alamesiga's time, and they were talking about it, blah blah blah. So what? But did Buhari say he will never pardon another person? He didn't say so. But there was a recommendation. There was a committee. So we don't know what was written there, but there must be a very, very strong justification on why they should what. I'm pardoned with what ex-governors and the rest of the people on the list. Thank you.
Thank you, Salihu. Let me go to Phoenix. So Phoenix, first thing Salihu says is we need to stop discussing Buhari's integrity. That just because he says he has integrity does not mean he's allowed to forgive. That he's not allowed to forgive. That Buhari has a forgiving heart and it's his prerogative to forgive. Secondly, he says that so what if the APC condemned the PDP when Alamasiya was pardoned? That after all, Buhari never said he wouldn't pardon anyone, so what? And then the third thing Salihu says is he doesn't know the reasons why, but he's sure the reason was the right reason because there must have been a good reason for Buhari doing that. He doesn't know what it is, but he's sure Buhari would not have pardoned unless there was a good reason. So how do you respond to these, Phoenix?
There was a recommendation. There was a committee that investigated this and came up with a recommendation for this presidential pardon. And yes, most likely there was a strong. So I want you to make it, there was a committee that was formed that came up with a recommendation and there must have been a strong justification for it. Yes.
Okay.
Please let me jump in. I thought Salihu would resist the bait I had set. And you hear Salihu do what APC defenders have done once you try to touch their tin god Buhari. It's not his fault, his integrity is unimpeachable. There was a committee that recommended, and so they are responsible and not him. There must have been good reasons, to justify, Buhari doing what they had previously condemned. And the point of, I started by saying that there is a role in a democracy for presidential pardons. Let's say you were unjustly convicted. A president can come, if an appeal is made to the president, those convictions can be quashed, and it's instructive that in this presidential pardon, people who took part in the Gideon Oka coup were actually pardoned. So there are reasons that a presidential pardon can be used to almost signal, the state's U-turn or change in direction about an issue that, at a certain point in time, in that nation's development, people were convicted for those acts. So there is a purpose for it. But the reasons given for the pardon of these two criminals was age and health. And it leads you to wonder, are these two guys the oldest people and the sickest people in Nigerian prisons? The point of these things, again, is signaling. The point of things like this presidential pardon is signaling. You are now telling society that at one time these people were convicted, but we have found it right to forgive them. And you're not telling us, you're telling Nigerians that at one time, these people were convicted as recently as 2018. We're not talking about 10 years ago. 2018, you were convicted. You are now pardoned by the president who came into office on a mantra of integrity and anti-corruption. It's ridiculous and it's disgusting that anybody would defend it. But I'm happy that he took the bait. I started off by talking about hypocrisy and my friend hasn't failed to disappoint.
Oh, thank you, sir. Let me bring in Phoenix at this point. So, Phoenix, do you agree with Salihu that this was a decision by committee? So we should not be pinning the blame on Buhari. A committee reached the decision and the recommendations must have been strong and therefore Buhari is absolved of blame, Phoenix?
I found that a very strange defense because that this is the first time this defense is coming up. There's a reason why it's called a presidential pardon. The buck stops at the president's table. Yes, there is a council of state that needs to recommend and make their recommendations, but he doesn't have to accept their recommendations. And we know that Buhari, when he has a strong opinion on an issue, will disagree and refuse. I mean, we've seen him refuse to give assent to bills passed by the National Assembly. So the idea that there was some strong recommendation by some committee or by the Council of State, and that is why it was done, doesn't hold water. It does not hold water. It is called a presidential pardon. The only person who can give the pardon is the president. Yes, recommendations will be made to him, and he will decide who he wants to pardon based on his own agenda. And so, in the same way that Jonathan was held responsible for pardoning Alamisia, Buhari is responsible and needs to have full accountability for the pardons that he has granted to Dariye and Nyame. Now, what is different for me, again, goes back to the issue that Saliu does not want us to discuss, which is Buhari's integrity. And when you say don't speak about Buhari's integrity, my question is, so what should we speak about? Because that was his number one selling point. That was the main thing that people bought into in bringing him to office. He was this lone, incorruptible figure. We had the single issue that had been created during the 2013 to 2015 period of politicking that brought the APC to the fore. We were told that that the PDP had been in power and that they were interminably corrupt to a large extent. That was true. And of course, these two governors were PDP governors. And so to save Nigeria, we needed to go and bring somebody of such a high integrity as we had never seen before to help stamp out corruption. So when he comes in, our expectation is a U-turn from what was the status quo. Our expectation is that he's coming in and would, you know, sweep the decks clean and give us a corruption-free Nigeria. And he started out in that manner. We started hearing everything about TSA, about this, about that, about new sheriff in town, about body language. We're told that all these things were going to happen. But we've seen a lot of U-turn over the same period. And that is culminating in his last days, where he is now giving pardons to convicted felons who looted the treasury. That was supposed to be anathema to Buhari. So to have Buhari do that makes it worse, more egregious than a Jonathan doing it. Because, number one, let me first say that the presidential pardon is a president's prerogative. That is the power that they are given, and they have the right to use it any way they want. So I never quibble with a president using their power, their pardon power. But when you have a toga, you are known for, to go against it is something that we must discuss and understand why. Because if you are seen as somebody who is a man of integrity, an incorruptible person, somebody who has always castigated people who have looted, somebody who looks with disdain at people who are said to be corrupt, to then decide that a 66-year-old man is old and therefore should be pardoned on the basis of old age and health, makes no sense to any right-thinking person. So for me, I disagree entirely that Buhari's integrity should not be talked about in this light. That is the one thing that we need to talk about him. What else am I going to talk about Buhari? What other antecedents will we talk about? That was the one thing he was supposed to bring to us. And by doing this, he is clearly refusing to live up to what was expected of him. And so, I mean, it raises enough of other questions on things that we've seen in the past. We've seen politicians cross captain from other parties into the APC when they have cases. I mean, Uzo Kalu comes to mind, and a host of others. So we've seen this happen over time. So seeing this is not exactly a surprise to me, but it further calls to question that idea of him being a man of integrity. I mean, I've never believed it. I believe this firmly, puts that in the shade, and therefore it needs to be spoken about. And it's the legacy that he's leaving for himself. He had the opportunity to build a different legacy for himself, but this is what he wants to be remembered by in the last days of his administration.
Thank you, Phoenix. Let me give the last word to Salihu. Salihu, you've heard what Phoenix and Ose have said. They've both strongly disagreed. They believe that Buhari is responsible. The buck stops at his table, and that this was the wrong decision to make. Has this changed your mind in any way, or are you still adamant?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. The problem Phoenix and Ose have is they want to put the sole responsibility of every failure in Nigeria on the integrity of President Muhammadu Buhari. But you cannot put the whole problem of one country on one single individual, and you keep attaching it to what his integrity. And like I said, again, there was a committee. Yes, Phoenix is right that everything stands on the head of Buhari to either agree or disagree. But we have senior stakeholders in that meeting that might have given very, very strong reasons on why he should pardon these two ex-convicts who at the end of the day were even members of Osei's party, even what they've learned it from that party. But moving forward again, I don't want to see him to say maybe I'm being defensive or whatnot. But again, when it comes to this whole integrity, so because Muhammad Buhari is a man of integrity that comes into power, that it means he should rob the whole integrity of the whole country. But we need to understand that even every individual that has to have an integrity is something of self-belief, and is something that you have to look at it from the moral and ethical perspective. Muhammad Buhari can be a man of integrity and he hires someone to come and work with him. But if that person has no moral or ethical backing with him, he's not going to be a man of integrity and he's going to go and fail in every assignment or no. But people can't just keep on putting the whole blame on this single individual. We should look at the bigger picture. This country is a complex country. Corruption itself is a complex notion. So we can't just hold it to Muhammadu Buhari or say, saying he set a bait for me. What bait did he set for me? I can't understand what bait he set. He didn't set a bait. There was a committee out there. Yes, I agree with Phoenix. He should decide. But obviously, like I said, I wasn't in that meeting. It's beyond just age you're saying or health-wise. Maybe that's what you read in the media, but I'm sure we'll say you were not in that chambers when those people were sitting down. I'm sure you didn't have someone in there that passed the information on what was discussed. You're just talking based on what you've read in the media. And then we'll leave it that way. But I think there were much stronger reasons on why not only these two convicts were there, but the rest of the 154 people, because I think in total it was 156. Thank you.
Phoenix. Worth pointing out that Dare and Namir were convicted, committed their crimes as PDP governors, had since joined the APC and become chieftains within the APC, and were forgiven as APC chieftains. It's worth pointing out so that, that point things were making that once you cross to the APC, your sins are forgiven. This is proof positive of that. So, when anyone
calls... They were also convicted under the APC government. So I don't think that really makes any difference. In 2018...
Yeah, and then they joined the APC I'm very, very big on signaling. The point is, this government, this administration, the man with the greatest integrity, President Muhammadu Buhari, has proven that regardless of what you do, once you fall under his wing, once you join the APC, you are untouchable. That's the signal that they are setting out. And it concerns me deeply because we are heading into elections where these persecutions will start. It concerns me beyond just, an academic exercise. There can be no grounds where it's okay for us to suggest that once you join the APC, you'll be forgiven. You either won't be convicted or you'll be forgiven. And that's wrong. And no person with integrity will be sending out such signals.
I think a couple of things for me. One is, going back to what Sally was saying about we're putting all the problems on Buhari's integrity. No. There are things that his integrity should have. The issue is his integrity should have solved certain issues. The single issue that was talked about was corruption and blah, blah, blah. We expected that his integrity will solve that and create a different Nigeria ident. The problems that Nigeria has, yes, again, they sit with Buhari, but that's an issue of competence, of capability, which he clearly doesn't have. So let's separate the two issues.
One is that his integrity has not brought Nigeria the positivity that we expected that he would bring. So it was Nigerians failed by trusting that that would solve their problems. And the problems that have been created are created because of what people called out at that time to say he did not have the capability to run this country. Nigeria is complex. Nobody debates that. But we also know that the Nigerian president is the singular most powerful person in this country. The powers that the Nigerian presidency has is enough for somebody who is capable and willing and interested in building a new Nigeria to do so. We know that for a fact. So the idea that he could not have sorted things out is not true. Back to you, Michael.
Thank you, Phoenix, for spending an interesting debate, hearing different perspectives. But we need to move to our final topic, which is the fuel subsidy. That's the issue that doesn't seem to go away. The National Assembly has approved further expenditure. So now the total amount to be spent for fuel subsidy in the 2022 will be 4 trillion naira. I did some rough calculations. My maths is not the best, but that's estimated to be around $8 billion. So let me go to Saliu first of all. Saliu, the Nigerian government is spending about $8 billion on subsidy payments. Meanwhile, we have universities that are still on strike because the government cannot pay university teachers. Healthcare is in crisis. Our doctors are fleeing the country because we are not paying them enough. Saliu, is this the best use of scarce funds to be supporting this subsidy system? Saliu?
Okay, that country is a complex country. We don't even know what, when the citizen wants in that country. When they want to remove this subsidy for them, they start shouting to go to their political representatives to bring it back everywhere. Now they try to help subsidize this country. People start shouting again. They need to understand that the prices of this barrel have moved from 67 to 73. How do you support this subsidy? We now talk about this corruption. I'm a lecturer. I used to lecture in Nigeria. We're trying to deal with this ASU people in terms of TSA. You see a lecturer teaching in 3-4 universities. Those lecturers are now fighting back. They go on strike with their unions. Corruption is fighting integrity. And sometimes, like I said, this stuff is just beyond the powers of this president. He decides, oh, they must use TSA, and the union goes on strike. You know, so these are a lot of issues that are just going. Corruption fighting integrity, integrity fighting corruption. But with regards to the subsidy, I mean, the barrels are up. You need to also understand that during the pandemic, Nigeria lost a lot of money. We lost a lot of money. There was an economic collapse during that period. So when the barrels go up, we need to support the subsidies. If we don't support the subsidies, people will keep lashing out at the government. They will decide to carry on with another NSAS protest that will impact negatively on the government and the people of the country. So, but obviously people are saying that it's coming up during the election period. And the reason is because those people that have sworn to God that they will never like this government have decided that any little thing the government does, they politicize it. They are afraid of elections because they know the APC will defeat them again in 2023. So this little money they want to use to support the government, they are talking about using it for election. With or without that money, APC will defeat PDP in any election. It will take by the grace of God for PDP to return back to government in that country. But we need to understand the realities. These barrels are up. The citizens are living based on this subsidy. We say we want to remove it, people shout. There's always a hard impact on it. Now we want to support it, they keep shouting again. So, I mean, it's good they approve it, but it's not for election, it's for the sake of that country. Thank you.
Thank you, Saliu. Osei, I need to come to you because some machine guns will be fired in your direction. They said those of you in the opposition who are hoping to frustrate this government that your plans will not work, that with or without any corruption, that you cannot defeat them. And I like the phrase Saliu says. He says, this is corruption trying to fight integrity, and integrity is fighting corruption back. So how do you respond to Saliu's comments, Osei? Do you, Do you share his views that these lecturers are lecturing in 3-4 universities? That's why they're refusing to go back to classes. So everybody's trying to basically, Salu is implying that this is be a conspiracy against Buhari's integrity. Is this how you perceive the issues?
I'm concerned about Salisu's aversion for data by Buhari's own Bureau of Statistics. Year on year, even during a pandemic when oil prices crashed and the world wasn't traveling, Nigeria's fuel consumption kept rising. You know, when oil prices crashed, fuel subsidies didn't drop. He makes a very curious argument that I'm actually struggling to understand how we went from what he was trying to say to PDP and APC are winning elections. In 2010, I think it was, or was it 2012, the PDP government said the subsidy is unsustainable, we want to get rid of it. His leaders at the time, I think they were in CPC and ACN, almost shut down this country with the Occupy Nigeria protests. PDP members, if you talk to people like me, are still saying that the subsidy is unsustainable. It's a corruption tax, literally a corruption tax. We do the amount of fuel we consume is impossible. We don't even have the number of vehicles on the road. And even their own NNPC DG admits that because we are subsidizing fuel, our fuel is the cheapest in the West African sub-region. So literally, we subsidize fuel, and if it comes into the country at all, it's hitting our borders. So we are telling you, Salihu, that we will support you, get rid of the subsidy, because it's unsustainable. And it's gotten to the point where revenues are not even covering this corruption tax. Now we are borrowing money. I think we went to Euro bond market and borrowed $2.2 billion to pay for a subsidy. You know, we're not even now talking about paying for recurrent expenditure like salaries and rent. We are now borrowing, going to Euro bond to borrow money to pay for the first subsidy that is mainly consumed by the middle class and the elite, because poor people use kerosene and firewood. Industries use diesel. So who exactly are we subsidizing if at all this fuel is even getting into our filling stations and petrol forecourts? You know, it's not my brother. Everything is not about PDP and APC. It really isn't. You know, this this very, very narrow worldview you have of politics and policy is quite disturbing. We want the subsidy to go because it's a corruption tax. We would support Buhari if he got rid of it. And in fact, I'm in Uromi now, and fuel is selling for about 200 and something naira. Diesel is selling for 700, and we are still paying a subsidy. We are still paying the subsidy. So, you know, I really don't want to get into how this is about 2023 election, because it is. The Buhari government has said they are not going to address the subsidy problem because, you know, anyone with integrity would bite the bullet at this point in time and do what's best for the country. But they've decided to do what's best for the APC, and they've kicked the can down the road till literally after the 2022 elections to decide whether they want to keep or get rid of the subsidy. Again, you know, it's easy to call yourself a saint. It's easy to try to cloak yourself with a toga of integrity. But it's when you're faced with these types of decisions, pardoning criminals, taking decisions that are in the best interest of the nation and not your party, you know, that we can truly see whether you are all talk and no walk. I'm just really confused about the counterfactual that my brother was putting out. I wish he had come with more data. I wish he had done a little bit more research on the topic. I will assure you, you know, if we get into office, we're getting rid of it. I don't think that is a PDP APC thing. It's a national conversation. It's crippling our country. And my guy needs to do a little bit more research before he comes on podcasts like this.
Thank you, Osei. Let me go to Phoenix. Phoenix, there's some interesting aspects of this budget for the subsidy. It says they're estimating that Nigeria will be producing 1.6 million barrels of oil per day. They're estimating the price of fuel to of oil to be $73 per barrel. Now, First of all, do you think these are achievable? Is Nigeria actually producing 1.6 million barrels per day? And secondly, is this affordable? I know Ose has talked a bit about the cost, but where are we even getting $8 billion? Are there people willing to lend us $8 billion? Is there a Eurobond to that effect? Or how can you talk us through the mechanics of this, Phoenix?
Thanks, Michael. On this particular topic, I mean, I think I wanted to start by doing justice to the 4 trillion number, just to help bring it home to people. The last budget before Buhari came into office was a 4.5 trillion naira budget. That was seven years ago. So the budget that he came into office in 2015 that was running, the total budget, the total spend for the federal government was 4.5 trillion naira. And he's just gotten permission from the National Assembly to spend 4 trillion naira on subsidy in 1 year. Just so people can have context for when we call out these numbers, it seems like, I mean, Nigerians have lost touch with how much this money truly means. Now, when you talk about, I mean, their projections, I mean, initially they had projected 1.8 million barrels of oil per day and blah, blah, blah. Nigeria doesn't produce, I think we're around 1.3 million if we're lucky. We're clearly way below the quota that OPEC plus countries have set. We've been way below. We've not been able to meet the quota that we were given to produce. So this is a pipe dream. We're not going to meet it, primarily because of poor investment over time, and then the huge oil theft issue that is happening. So we're not seeing all of that money coming to our coffers. Of course, we've seen the oil price go up, as Saliu mentioned, and so it explains why they are expanding the benchmark price for oil in the budget, but that's not going to do Nigeria any good. No, that money doesn't account for much. Now, when you ask, are there people lining up to borrow Nigeria money? Of course. As long as you have oil proceeds and they know that they can have a first line charge on being able to get repaid, people will lend you money. The question is, at what price are you being lent the money? When you're taking euro bonds at 8%, surely you know that you are holding the short end of the stick. Nigeria has been borrowing at very high cost compared to other emerging market economies. And for a country that has oil revenues, we clearly are not doing well in those markets. So yes, they will keep borrowing you money, especially because we keep making this noise around debt to GDP, blah, 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 and all of that. But when you clearly look at our revenue to debt service, we're already spending 100% of how much we make as a country in service and debt. So it's only a matter of time before we fully strangle, especially if the borrowing continues to be external borrowing and not local borrowing, because local borrowing, you can probably get away with it. Your central bank has a blank check for you and they continue printing money, and so you can pay off your domestic debts. Of course, you create inflation, you create other systemic challenges. But when it's FX, the reason why they're still lending you is because you have oil that you can sell and you bring in dollars. They know they will get their money, your country be damned. And so, I mean, when we talk about the subsidy issue, I think for me, I mean, going back to, I'm big on legacy. And so, especially for presidents, I mean, you have that enormous power. I want to be able to look at your time in office and understand, okay, so what do you leave us with? What do we remember your time for? And I think Buhari, I don't know who his advisors are, and I don't know how he thinks around these things, but I'm just looking at somebody who's lost the opportunity of a legacy moment. This was his legacy moment. Buhari came in with so much goodwill that he was the one person who could singularly remove fuel subsidy from Nigeria and probably pay a very little price for doing so. We know what happened when, for very good reasons. In fact, if we go back to Obasanjo's time, Obasanjo tried to use the last days of his presidency to create that opportunity for Yar'Adua by increasing the fuel price just before Yar'Adua came in. Of course, there was an uproar, but Yar'Adua, being a man of the people, undid that and did not address the issue before he passed on. Jonathan tried to address the issue. We know what happened with Occupy Nigeria and blah, 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 and that whole thing that swept him out of office 3 years down the line. But Buhari came in with that, with the goodwill and with the economic conditions that were conducive for him to do that. And it would have been a great legacy for Nigeria to have removed subsidy once and for all, because everybody who has analyzed this and understands economics knows that Nigeria has simply been pouring water into a basket. It makes zero sense for the country and for its poorest citizens to be burning money this way. They benefit nothing from this. It is just a conduit for corruption, for stealing, and for all those kind of things. So for you to come out and say you're going to spend 4 trillion naira on fuel subsidy at a time when we have over 60% of our people dirt poor, where we have unemployment of more than 50% of people between the ages of 15 to 35, you're spending 4 trillion naira on subsidy makes no sense. But this president doesn't understand what legacy means, doesn't understand how to, you know, create a nation that can, you know, continue to do well beyond his time, that can look back and say, look, we benefited. Yes, everybody knew that there will be pain if you do it. There are several countries that bit the bullet. In the Gulf countries, I remember the UAE back when we had the fuel crisis in 2014, they ripped off the Band-Aid and stopped providing a fuel subsidy to their people and instead channeled that into something else, where they were now, you know, providing homes, subsidized homes for their people. That's how to subsidize. You create jobs with people in construction who will build locally, and then you create wealth for your people by helping them to get onto the property ladder. But here, instead, what we have fueled is a corruption industry where, number one, people are taking our fuel and taking it across the border. Nigeria is said to be consuming 100 million liters per day of petrol, which makes absolutely no sense because we haven't grown in terms of the number of industry or number of vehicles that we have. If you remember that even during the Occupy Nigeria movement, we were said to be consuming 35 million liters then, and everybody went into opera. Today, it's around 100 million liters. Our population surely hasn't grown by that much. So it will have made a lot of sense to have removed this subsidy so we won't have this kind of bill on our heads at the time when we're borrowing, even to pay, to run government, we're borrowing, and now we're also borrowing, you know, to do subsidies. So it's really, for me, it's one of the things that, I mean, from a legacy perspective, that you know, further crystallizes that my view that, I mean, it's a wasted moment. It's a wasted 8 years. I mean, think about a 10-year-old kid when Buhari came to office is now going to be about to vote for the first time. I mean, the amount of that has been lost for Nigeria is immeasurable. I mean, it's for us to still be talking about subsidy now is just, it's crazy.
Thank you, Phoenix. Let me give Salihu the last word. Salihu, an interesting part of this subsidy debate is the fact that your government has announced that they were removing it many times. They, first of all, under the former petroleum minister, I can't believe I've actually forgotten his, Kachiku, they said it had been gone. Then Osinbajo announced that it'd also been removed, but Osinbajo called it under recovery. So at least 3-4 times they've announced the removal of this subsidy, but they're still paying it. Doesn't that show that not only is your government, I don't know, or this APC government sort of inconsistent, they don't seem to know what they are doing. Why this level of what some would describe as dishonesty, Salihu? Why is that?
Michael, thank you for this. for this, I was really commend Phoenix for such a proper analysis with regards to this for subsidy. No doubt, I listened to him attentively, and I must go back to say, I'm just gonna tell him that I'm not gonna join issues with him. He's there from wherever he's saying that if someone doesn't get his fact and figures, he shouldn't come to a podcast. My friend will say, this is not a place to come and win an award or whatever it is. It's just based on realities of what's facing Nigeria. And I'm sure you have a very, very good history about subsidy and the corruption in subsidy in Nigeria. So I'll leave you to go and sit down and reflect on that. But Phoenix has given a very, very good analysis. And yes, there's a lot of corruption and there's been a lot of inconsistency with regards to the whole idea of the whole subsidy. And again, that boils down to an aspect where I believe there have been a lot of limitations in the APC government, which is with regards to a lot of economic policies that have been adopted, and we still haven't, over this 8 years period, been able to find a good economic blueprint that would have guided us into a lot of these challenges we had, or made our economy very, very resilient to the impact of the global challenges. So yes, there's been a lot of inconsistencies, but I don't know who keeps advising them. But obviously, if they had removed the subsidy from the onset, I'm sure the fuel price would have gone super up. It would have had a lot of negative impact, but I'm sure over a period of time, Nigeria would have adjusted and things would have gotten better. But I guess they kept on convincing them that, oh, don't remove it now, keep it there. And again, try to spend this subsidy money so that we can have we don't expect people to pay more for the PMS. But on the other hand, again, you see with this subsidy stuff, and we've had it back and forth, you know, it's I'm not even in the oil and gas sector, but you see a lot of media news on it. There's a lot of corruption going around in that oil and gas sector, you know, and it requires the grace of God for someone to come in and fight it. Yes, one place of where President Muhammadu Buhari has maybe been unable to, due to these challenges or due to this corruption fighting integrity back, is towards this area of subsidy removal. I believe there is a lot that needs to be done in that area, and I'm sure and I hope that whichever government comes in, and most likely an APC government, they will be able to take the bull by the horn and just directly want to remove this subsidy, because from all economic policies, it seems that this policy is not good for the country. Policies that have been taking place in the Western countries and brought back to the global south. Sometimes just bringing these policies might not necessarily be the best policies for the country, and sometimes it takes time. I guess it's a gradual or phased removal of these policies rather than removing them once and for all. So at this side of this whole idea of, with regards to the money, I feel it's justified if subsidizing the fuel is going to reduce the cost and the hardship in the country. But with regards to the impact it has on the country, it has significant impact on the country. And I believe Phoenix has given a very, very good answer to that. I cannot argue against him because he has broken them down with the figures and he has explained to. And yes, from this economic policy, there is no doubt the APC hasn't been doing so well in these areas. And I cannot sit down here and defend the APC government in every aspect, of the society, because obviously there are some areas that were doing very, very well, but there are some areas that were not doing very well, but definitely much better than the previous government. And I don't think the previous government would have been able to survive or be resilient like the way this government is. So basically, that's my response to with regards to this whole money that was asked for with regards to the money. Again, we don't have a choice. Our revenues are very, very low at this moment. And like again, I said, from an economic perspective, we haven't done so well. And I'm hoping that we're going to do better, hopefully from in the next government that's to come.
Thank you, Salihu, for your comments. But our time is up. So first of all, I must thank our two guests. Thank you, Osei, and thank you, Salihu, for what has been a very interesting debate. And we will see in a few months who is going to win this election, whether PDP or APC. Thank you, Phoenix, for co-hosting and for giving us helpful insight into the operations of the petroleum sector. But finally, I must thank our listeners who've been loyal, keeping us on our toes, and always giving us useful feedback. But until same time next week, for those of you who are Christian, I say happy Easter, and I wish you all a fantastic 7 days. Many thanks.
Thanks, Salihu and Ose, for joining us this week. Thank you, Michael, for leading another great discussion. And thank you, listeners. Wish everyone a happy week ahead. And yes, happy Easter. And of course, Ramadan Kareem to our Muslim brethren as well. Bye, everyone.
Thanks, guys. It was a pleasure as always. Phoenix, I'm in awe of your patience. I think I need to pray a little bit more. Happy Easter, Ramadan Kareem. See you guys soon.
Farewell.